Good morning and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM and also for FSU. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for being at the other end of the radio waves, also the television signal, the Twitter machine, the email device, the telephone, and all the other ways we have to communicate nowadays. Isn't modern technology a wonderful thing? 414-1234 is the local number. I'd love to add you to the conversation today. 800-926-8809 if long distance. Perspectives@WFSU.org is the email address, and you can send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. Few conflicts in American history have been as significant or divisive as the Vietnam War, of course. There have been many attempts to capture and shed new light on that era over the years. And the latest such effort will premiere on WFSU-TV and other public television stations nationwide the evening of Sunday, September 17th. Filmmaker Ken Burns has produced a new documentary on the Vietnam War. And in anticipation of that, and as part of the ongoing conversation about Vietnam, we are welcoming a Tallahassee area veteran of the war to Perspectives today, Leon J. Roy IV, Command Sergeant Major, U.S. Army, retired, served from 1957 until 1980. And Sergeant, good to see you, sir.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Before we get into the nuts and bolts of your service here, we wanted to talk a little bit about how you got into the service, first of all, because I believe the first U.S. advisors went into Nam in 1950. I was checking that out. Of course, we didn't know it at the time. This was a very surreptitious kind of thing. We kind of backed our way into this conflict. But when you got in 1957, was that an immediate Vietnam experience for you, or did you have some time there?
No, it wasn't an immediate perspective. We didn't know anything about it at that time. 1964, I was in Germany at the time, and I was in an airborne unit, and the war had just started. Basically, I mean, where they were taking advisors, and I applied to, you know, go over as an advisor. But at the time in 64, they were only taking senior officers and, you know, high-ranking NCOs at that time. And I was only an E5 buck sergeant, but I still put my paperwork in. And in February 65, I resubmitted again because I felt a need to go over there. Being an infantryman, you know, that was my job. And I was just had the feeling I needed to go over there and experience the conflict as it was.
Yeah, well, at the time, though, as an advisor, initially, U.S. troops were not supposed to be part of that fight. As advisors, we were supposed to be kind of helping out the Army of South Vietnam, right?
Yes, I was assigned to Advisory Team 33, which was – now, this is in 65, and I was advising the 3rd Battalion of the 45th Infantry Arvin Unit. And I had with me one officer and another NCO. It was three of us on the team at that time. And we'd go on operations with them and, you know, help them out in whatever way, observe what was going on, call in any kind of help that we needed at that time. It was pretty interesting. I got attached to the Vietnamese real quick. They, you know, it's like anything else. They were doing their job. They were protecting their country. And, you know, at first, on the first operations I went on, you know, I became used to being under fire. I mean, we were right up there in the front. And so I don't know, but they would walk around and say, VC, no get me, you know, and they eventually did, but that's some of the memories I have.
Let's tap another memory here, too. This is a gentleman from Tallahassee by the name of Tom Baxter, a U.S. Army track and wheel vehicle mechanic. He served in Nam from 1966 until 1969. And what you're about to hear is part of the Ken Burns premiere that we're going to be having on the 17th on WFSU-TV. Let's give a listen.
I had a cush life, like I said, basically slept in a barracks, went down to the shop, bent wrenches, filled out forms, came back. I was part of the 80%. 80% of the people in Vietnam, soldiers in Vietnam, were not and were not involved in heavy combat, heavy continuous combat. And the reason was is basically you want a techno war, you got to have a bunch of technicians.
Contact 330.
Other men must master newer skills and disciplines required by new technologies.
That's Tom Baxter of Tallahassee, who served in Vietnam from 1966 until 1969. And again, as a mechanic, but Leon Roy, you were out there with the South Vietnamese troops. What was your first combat experience? When did that happen?
My first one was in probably August or September of 65. I went over in July of 65, and we were engaging mostly the Viet Cong units, you know, not the hardcore NVA. Those guys came in later, but and you could sure tell the difference when they came in. They were well-trained troops. And but anyway, I would go on missions as they were called, you know, during the month. I'd come back in for 2 or 3 days and we'd get ready to go back out again. And it was pretty interesting. I ate a lot of rice. You know, we had to eat what they ate, so it was pretty good.
That's a bit of a culture shock, though, isn't it, coming from the U.S., though, into not just halfway around the world, but an entirely different culture, different food, certainly a different language.
Yes. I can still speak a little bit of Vietnamese, but not much. I was at Fort Bragg going through special forces training there, and when they made the Song Tay raid into North Vietnam— my unit went. I was in Delta Company of the 6th at that time. However, I went up for an interview to see if they, you know, to get on the team to go, and they said they couldn't take me because I was in Vietnamese language school. So, you know, I didn't get to make the raid with my friends, but anyway, that's...
That was that communication component was an important part of the whole thing.
Yeah, but let me continue on about that. So I go to Vietnam with all this Vietnamese on my last tour and Vietnamese training, and they said, you got two places you can go. You can go to CCN, which is recon, or you can go down and work with the Cambodians. So being I was a linguist of a little bit, like Muay Thai, Bible, there were three of us, and we all volunteered to go down to the Cambodian. And so I've trained three different armies, really. I trained the Vietnamese, the Thais. I was in Thailand for a year, and then, of course, the Cambodians for the last time. And I was in combat with all three of them.
Oh, my gosh. So really a multinational force that you were in charge of at least helping to coordinate then.
Yes.
All right. Let's hear from another. And by the way, the local stories that we're hearing right now are not actually part of the Ken Burns documentary, but they are our segments that we're putting online and also on WFSU TV locally. So didn't want to misspeak on that. This next one is Ross Dorman. He is U.S. Army Specialist, 4th Class Combat Infantry, and he was in Vietnam between 1968 and 1969. Let's hear his remembrances.
My first day out there, we're crossing a river, right? I'm a new guy, scared pretty much. And we cross this little river, and the tide is out when we go across the river, right? We wade, it's knee high, and we go out and we do this little sweep, don't find anything. We come back to cross the river, and it's 10 feet deep and raging, tidal thing. So I'm about to go across they have a rope across there. Half the company's gone across already. And just as I'm getting ready to go across, somebody starts shooting at us, right? Bullets splashing in the water. So I'm going underwater and coming up and shooting, and they have to tell me to stop because I don't know when to stop. They said, okay, well, that was just one guy shooting a few rounds. Everything's okay. Now come across. Well, they had a raft, and everybody's putting their weapons on the raft. I'm so scared that I will not turn my rifle loose. So I start going across the rope, and I miss the rope with my hand. I go down one time. I'm a hand grenade, machine gun bullets, all that stuff, sea rations. I'm a real strong swimmer. So I come up, and I missed it again. And I said to myself, well, you are not going to die getting shot. You're going to drown the first day out here. And I came up and grabbed that rope, made it across, was throwing up, I swallowed water. Then we get out and get in a company-sized ambush like 4 minutes later. My legs were like jelly. Well, that was my first day out there. So, yeah, there was anxiety.
Ross Dorman, U.S. Army Specialist, 4th Class Combat Infantry, served in Vietnam between 68 and 69. And we have Leon J. Roy with us also here on Perspectives. And we'd like to hear your Vietnam memories. That's the name of the program, as we are being simulcast on WFSU-TV and also delayed broadcast on 4FSU. It's 414-1234. Our local phone number, 800-926-8809. If you're checking in from long distance, or drop us a line via email, perspectives@wfsu.org. We'll be right back. We are back on Perspectives, Memories of Vietnam, our special simulcast presentation on WFSU-FM and 4FSU. And a reminder, you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org, our new and improved, much more user-friendly and accessible website. Go to WFSU.org, click on Radio, pull down the Programs menu, and then click Perspectives. We archive past shows, try to have them up there on the web within, well, by the close of business day, on the day that the program actually airs. And another reminder, coming up on Thursday, October 19th at 7 in the evening, WFSU is hosting a live event. It's called Vietnam, No Single Story, No Single Song. It's a two-hour live studio event with clips from the Ken Burns documentary that premieres on September 17th. Clips from the local interviews we've done, of which we've been hearing a couple of them. Readings from Pulitzer Prize winner and Vietnam veteran Robert Olin Butler, and then music from the 60s and 70s performed by local groups such as Mimi Hearn and Frank Graham, with Kevin Robertson, Mark Patton, Yellow Soul, Sway Jabu, Rachel Hillman, and then a discussion following that. You can register online and go to WFSU.org. We have a special Vietnam page, and also Facebook, and you can check out at WFSU Media for all of these things. So much going on relative to that. We had just heard the Ross Dorman clip. First time the bullets started flying, and he's afraid he is going to drown, Leon Roy. When the bullets started flying the first time for you, what was that like?
It was different. I would just look for a good place to conceal my body. And because if you're in the open, they're going to, you know, they're going to find you. So I can remember one experience. I was behind a tank. Now, this is an actual tank driven by the Vietnamese. And we were in an operation, and we were in an attack. And I was behind the tank, and that thing, every time it stopped and fired, it rolled backwards. And I said to myself, Leon, you better find a tree or something to get behind. I didn't want the tank to come back on me. And being a large size vehicle, you know, it would take a lot of fire from the enemy.
Well, and there was a different technique of fighting that the Viet Cong, whether the irregular troops or the regular, the really highly trained guys, that was all hit and run. You had, all of the underground tunnels that they had in different parts of the combat zone, and you never knew where those guys were.
No, we've come across areas where they had a base camp, and the base camp was just as clean as a pencil. You couldn't see nothing that would say they were there. There was no empty cans or paper or anything like that. But there were the holes, and you just took a frag grenade and threw it down in the hole, and followed by a concussion grenade, and hopefully that you would get one of them, but those tunnels ran so far back that didn't even bother them.
So what about the tunnel rats who actually had to go down there and do exploratories? That had to be absolutely terrifying.
Yes, I would say so. I'm just glad I weighed more than I did. I didn't have to go in there.
Well, we have another clip here from our good friend Ross Dorman, who talks about his combat experience in Vietnam. And let's listen to that right now.
Well, you're walking through the jungle and you hear a shot or two. If they're shooting at you, it's a real distinct sound. But what happens is you just fall to the ground. And after you hit the ground, you figure out whether you're dead or not. And then it sounds like the universe is being ripped in two when 80 GIs shoot back. It's an incredible sound that you'll never forget. It sounds like God is ripping the universe in two when 80 M16s and machine guns start shooting at the same time. And generally, by that time, whoever shot at you is gone down the trail, you know.
And that had to be frustrating when the Americans had all this technology. You had, in many cases, superior firepower, B-52s overhead, F-105s, thuds on bombing missions, all this stuff. And the other side just sort of pops up, shoots, and runs, and they vanish.
Yes, that was a large part of the problem. A lot of the soldiers, I'm sure, had fired a heck of a lot of ammunition and not hit nothing because there was nothing there. They were so well disguised, and they were waiting for us. another instance, I went up on a, we had a chopper shot down, and we had to go up and get, you know, disarm it and all that and get everything off of it, and then we had to blow it up. It was a brand new H model, and it had one bullet hole in it, and it was right where the pilot was sitting. It came up through the plexiglass and caught him in the zipper line, I guess, of his flak jacket. And that was pretty sad. And then, so four of us went up on this mountain, and we had a demo man with us, and he rigged C4 in the fuel cell of the chopper. All the radios and weapons were taken off, and he rigged it up, and we put a three-minute fuse on it. Well, the three-minute fuse, when we pulled it, we ran down the hill on a high-speed trail, and right off the high-speed trail was a fighting trench, and I fell in that fighting trench and hit my chest, and I said, oh, man. And there was nobody in there, thank God they had left. And I looked down the hill, and I could see the fields of fire they had. And we had lost 11 Americans that morning, and I see why. I mean, they had the advantage on us coming up that hill, and they could have just, anybody coming up, they would have got them all anyway.
Well, they owned the geography. They knew it a heck of a lot better than any Americans did.
Right. And then because they left, they went somewhere else on the mountain. But it was pretty terrifying to see those dead Americans that walked into an ambush, you might say.
You're listening to a special simulcast, Vietnam Memories, on WFSU-FM and also 4FSU. Would like to hear your Vietnam memory, whether you were a civilian or you were in the armed forces back in the day. 414-1234 is our local number, or 800-926-8809 if long distance between you and us. From the Ken Burns program, which will be premiering on September 17th, Sunday night, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, let's hear an excerpt from the Vietnam special by Ken Burns, and this is cut number one. Let's listen to that.
The war by 1966 began to impact the middle class because the draft calls had to be enlarged. They couldn't get enough people to volunteer or draft people out of the working class. They started drafting people out of college. And that's when the anti-war movement shifted from a moral movement to a self-interest movement.
Now, Leon, that was a pivotal time in the war when you used to be able at the beginning to get student deferments and all other kinds of things to keep you out of there. When they went to the numerical draft, when your number was up, and it was either Canada or you get shipped out there. Did you see on the ground in Vietnam a shift in the makeup of the military after they went to that different draft system?
No, not really. The reason for that was the units that I was in. I was with Special Forces, and then I was with the advisory teams. And I didn't have that much contact with the regular GIs. And so I didn't really notice any difference in the movement or anything. Until I got back, I came back in 66, you know, they weren't very appreciative of us when we came back. We were just doing our job, you know. I mean, that man was fighting for his country and we were fighting for ours. But politics overruled everything.
What was that homecoming like for you?
It wasn't too bad. I was called a baby killer. The guy that called me a baby killer ended up on the dance floor.
Literally.
Yes. And that was in Oakland, California, when I was getting ready to go on my last tour. And they didn't – all the movement that was going on in the States, well, you know, during the 60s, I was in Germany and when Kennedy was killed, and I thought we were going to war at that time. And then I was in Vietnam for, you know, 65, 66, 60, let's see, 68, 69, I was in northern Thailand, and 70 and 71, I was back in Vietnam again.
Wow, and that was, and we got out in 73, yes. I believe November of 73, when that last chopper left
right.
the embassy. In Saigon. Another clip now from the Ken Burns special on Vietnam. This is number two in the war from a different perspective.
My father was very happy. We're such a small and poor country, and the Americans have decided to come in to save us, not only with their money, their resources, but even with their own lives. We were very grateful. We thought, with this power, the Americans are going to win.
And that's a woman, a South Vietnamese woman, talking about her memories of Vietnam there. And you had good relationships with the South Vietnamese that you worked with, Leon.
Yes, I did. And I still, the Rangers that were over there, the American advisors, well, I was in a unit that wasn't a Ranger unit advising that unit. But we all get together and every year or two, and we have a reunion. And we have Vietnamese friends. I have some in Orlando that I worked with here in the States. And they're good people. I went to a wedding and everything. And the reception was the best part.
Well, we keep forgetting that so many of the folks in South Vietnam came to North Florida and started fishing businesses after the fall of Saigon. They relocated. They wanted to stay with the Americans, even to the point of coming to America themselves.
Yes, a lot of them are in New Orleans for that reason, the fishing and along the coast. I have a friend here that's from Vietnam. He was a lieutenant, I believe, in the Vietnamese Army, and he has a gas station out on Highway 27, so I stop in to see him all the time.
Another clip now from the Ken Burns special that will be premiering on WFSU-TV on Sunday, September 17th. This is cut number three.
It felt like something was happening that was profound, that was irreversible. America has always had a rich tradition of protest.
I felt as though a revolution was coming, and I thought the revolution would be won by our side.
And that harkens back to what we were talking about a moment ago, Leon, the folks who took a different tack when it came to the Vietnam War. You came back and felt that animosity and that hostility on the part of some folks. Do you hold any grudges against the folks who protested the war or had that view that what we were doing over there was wrong?
No, not really. You know, they have their views, and they didn't want to go, and, you know, I felt that they should, and, you know, it's part of their duty as a citizen of the United States. But, no, I don't hold any animosity even towards the North Vietnamese. The North Vietnamese, you know, they were doing their job. They were trying to defend themselves. So, you know, just...
How much of a perception was there, though, that there was, shall we say, another force behind this? For instance, the MiGs that would come up and do battle with our folks, whether in Crusaders or F-4 Phantoms or anything else, that a lot of those folks were not Vietnamese.
No, they weren't. They were advisors. Now, I have a picture, and I can tell you that they had advisors like we did. We captured a guy one day that was in a B-52 strike, and he didn't know where he was, but he was Chinese. He must have took the wrong road getting there or something. But, yes, they did have different. Some were more bigger than a regular Vietnamese, you know, taller. I don't know where they were from, but.
Yeah, did you meet any Russian advisors during that time that you were over there?
No, no.
They were rumored to have been some. So.
Well, I'm sure, but they weren't, you know, in the areas that we were in. You know, you have to remember that special forces at that time were trained to train people and bring them out into the, you know, into the field and let them experience the combat and turn them on their loose. I had a battalion out of Cambodia, and I got attached to those guys, and they went back to Cambodia on Highway 2 and were annihilated down to the last man. I felt bad about that, but they were just overrun. That once you're, once they break through, something else. I have a brother that was in the Idrang Valley the same time that I was over there. We were both over in Vietnam the same time. He was with the 1st Cav. And I talked to him night before last. He just called to see how I was doing. But he still has memories from the Idrang Valley. Well, we were soldiers. I don't know if you've seen that documentary. But he was in Charlie Company. And I happened to have it on tape, so I watched it the next night, looking, see what was going on. But the way they, you know, attacked, the way they came, they were just, you know.
They came.
They came. And if you missed one, he might get you, you know.
Vietnam Memories, our simulcast special on WFSU-FM and for FSU, 414-1234. If you'd like to share your Vietnam memories, 800-926-8809. I see Ben is on line one. We'll get to him right after this break. Don't go away. Vietnam Memories on WFSU-FM and 4FSU. We are joined on line one by Ben. Hi, Ben. Thanks for calling and welcome.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
I just got a little time here, and I think my battery's about to go out. But I was a pilot and retired as a colonel in the Air Force. But at the time, 1967, I was a pilot flying out of Thailand over North Vietnam in a group called the Wild Weasels, flying F-105s. Our purpose was a hunter-killer teams against surface-to-air missile sites. And it wasn't near maybe as personal and threatening as some of your people we've had on, but we did lose a lot of pilots, and a lot of my good friends ended up as POWs for 6.5 or 7 years.
But we were just talking about that off-air, Ben, and I think there were some congratulations and some gratitude that Leon Roy has as far as his involvement with the Air Force in Vietnam, right, Leon?
Yes, as I mentioned, the Air Force really supported us with the gunships and the flare ships, you know, that the funny thing about the flare was every time the flare would come on, everything would stop. You could get up and walk around on both sides. But as soon as that flare started to flicker, all hell broke loose.
That's what happened. Ben, thank you so much for your Vietnam memories here on our special program today. Let's cue up cut four from the Ken Burns special that will premiere on September 17th.
I don't think a military mom at the time would want to announce, my son has gone AWOL, my son has run to Canada, my son is, all the words that were associated with it, a deserter, a coward, all of the things that these guys were called. I don't think that's what those guys thought they were doing. I do not think they thought they were deserting. I do not think they thought they were cowards. In fact, I think they thought they were very brave.
And your thoughts on that one, Leon, for the guys who did not serve, who either went to Canada, they went underground, they went AWOL, they didn't. How much resentment was there among the active duty folks in Nam?
Well, there was a lot of resentment. You know, here we are sacrificing our blood for them, and they don't want to share their blood. They'd rather run away or to another country or something like that. But, you know, it's been 50-something years, so now I just settle back and just, you know, don't worry about them.
Yeah, but well, we will also mention that you you continue to serve. In fact, here in the run-up to a potential visit to Florida by Hurricane Irma, you are going to be potentially back on the front lines again here.
Yeah, I know. But I'm used to that. Like I told you earlier, you know, that I'm a type A person, and I like to be where the action is and help the people I can help. And so I'm not really looking forward to this hurricane coming in because a lot of people are going to suffer. And that's the bad part about it. But whatever, you know, just being one person, whatever I can do to help, you know, that's what I want to do.
Wanted to remind you, too, this Friday, September 8th, WFSU Public Media will have a pre-screening of The Vietnam War, a film by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick at Westminster Oaks over at the McGuire Center. And registration is required. So if you'd like to go, want to hop on our website, WFSU.org, or on our Facebook page at WFSU Media for Eventbrite registration. That'll be going on this Friday because we do not anticipate any kind of landfall that would impact us up here in North Florida, at least as far as Friday is concerned. Now,
right.
Don't know about Saturday and Sunday. That gets a little bit iffy there, I think.
Yeah, I think Sunday evening is going to be the time that we'll receive some of the wind, I guess you might say.
Yeah, when you have a storm that's about 400 miles across, yeah, you're going to get something from that. Next up on the Ken Burns special, an excerpt that kind of tugs at the heartstrings, anyone who has lost anyone to combat. This is what that's about. Let's hear it.
I had the opportunity to call my mother. And I said, you'll probably never see me again because everybody in my unit's dying. I probably won't be coming back. And my mother said, no, you're coming back. She said, I talk to God every day, and you're special. And I said, Ma, everybody's mother thinks that they're special. You know, I'm putting pieces of special people in bags.
Leon, how many friends did you lose?
Quite a few. And being from the type of unit that I was in now, you have to remember that I didn't have 180 guys in a company or anything like that. But I did lose quite a few friends. They were mostly on recon missions. And in fact, one of them, Mad Dog Shriver, I ran into him. We were together in Germany. And the war came up. And of course, I was one of the first ones out of the unit to go to Vietnam. And Jerry came over a little bit later. And he's from right here in North Florida. And We ran a lot of recon together, and he was well known over there. I asked him one time, I said, Jerry, how many of them you killed so far this year? He looked at me, and it was in June, and he said, 52. He said, I shoot them 1 inch behind the left ear, then I fold arms. The North Vietnamese had a bounty on him, and of course, evidently they got him, but it took quite a while. He would wave to him off the chopper skids when he was coming in, come find me. And that's just the type of guy he was.
But there was that level of personal recognition that this is the guy who is taking out our people and we're putting a bounty on his head, essentially?
Yes. Yes. I wish I had the information with me today to let you read that about him. It's not that much publicized because of, you know, the SOG units. And but, you know, I had a chance to do that on the last tour. But what happened was we went over, we checked in the train. And the guy said, well, we got two places you can go. You can go to CCN, which runs the recon, or you can go to the Cambodian thing. He said, go over to the club. This is 10 o'clock in the morning. Get yourself a beer. Think about what you want to do and come back and tell me. So we went over to the club and ran into a guy from CCN. He said, whatever you do, don't come over here. He said, all the LZs, that's landing zones, are compromised. He said, we're losing teams every day. They'll put them in. By the time the chopper picks up and gets ready to leave, they've got them.
So essentially you'd be dropped off in a kill zone.
Right, right. So the three of us decided, well, maybe going to Cambodia would be a little bit better. But we ended up in a camp down in Four Corps, right on the Cambodian border. And they would bring the Cambodians across the border, and we'd train them and then take them on operations. And, you know, like I said before, take them out and let them experience some live fire. Now, we had the first one that we took out, we had 80 MIAs the first day. But we found them all the next day.
Oh, that must have been a relief.
It was.
My Lord. Well, let's hear another cut here from the Ken Burns special that's coming up on the 17th. This is number 6.
Combat is like crack cocaine. It's an enormous high, but it has enormous costs. And I think that we make a big mistake if we say, oh, war is hell. We all know the war is hell story. It is, but there's an enormously exhilarating part of it.
Did you know any guys who were like that, who just were that gung-ho, that when they got into a combat situation, the eyes sparkled and their posture was ramrod straight, and man, they were ready to go.
Not really. To be honest, everybody, if you know that there's a good opportunity for you to die, you kind of just, you know, don't try to put yourself in that situation, you know. I was trying to think of an experience that I had like that. We were ambushed one time, me and this advisor, and we were on the ground, naturally, because they were using machine guns on us. And he said to me, he said, Leon, look behind us and see if they're coming around behind us. So I picked up my head and turned around and looked, and there was a little bush, like a pepper bush, and the machine gun opened up and the pepper bush just disappeared. And I turned back to him. I said, no, I don't think they're behind us. They're in front of us. But that's just one of the comical things. And then I got the Vietnamese, you know, Americans were different, but the Vietnamese flew A1Es. They called them Sandies. And during that firefight, we had a 500-pound bomb drop right on top of us. Now, that's an experience, because after the explosion, you know, everybody's from both sides is running around, and there was all this yellow smoke, you know, to show where we were at. And I just happened to, you know, turn and go the right way, or I could have been in North Vietnam.
Well, speaking of which, of course, there are always multiple sides to any conflict. And let's get another perspective on the Vietnam War from someone from the North. Again, an excerpt from the Ken Burns program.
Từ năm 1970 trở đi, đối phương trên chiến trường là quân Nam Việt Nam, là người Việt Nam. Và bi kịch của nó là chỗ nào? Cái bi kịch của chiến tranh Việt Nam là bi kịch người Việt Nam giết nhau, hỏa lực Mỹ nhưng mà xương thịt là người Việt.
And in case you don't know Vietnamese, the words were as follows: from 1970 on, our enemy on the battlefield was the Army of South Vietnam. They were Vietnamese, and that's the tragedy. Vietnamese killed each other. American firepower, Vietnamese flesh and blood.
That's true. But that was part of the strategy that the government had, you know, to let the Vietnamese take over. And that's a strategy basically what we're using today in Afghanistan. We're training the troops over there, and then we're going to turn it over to them, which we should. You know, it's their country, and the philosophy that we've had to go in and make them like us, it's not going to work with those people. They've been doing it the way they've been doing it for thousands of years, and they're not going to change their ways.
Yeah, perhaps we have not thought of what it would be like for another occupying force to come into this country and side with, say, one half of America against the other half. It's difficult to wrap our minds around what that might be like. And as you said, Leon, whether it's Vietnam or Afghanistan, that's kind of what's going on.
Yes. I don't think we should have been there that long. I mean, the length of the fight over there and the loss of the Americans is not I don't think it's worth it.
If you get an opportunity to go on to our Facebook group here at WFSU Media, you can share your Vietnam stories. And also on our webpage, too, which is WFSU.org/Vietnam, or go to at WFSU Media on Facebook, and you can put your ideas, your concepts, your memories here from the Vietnam era on there. And we certainly invite you to be part of not only the online premiere coming up on Sunday, September 17th, which is the Ken Burns special, the eagerly awaited Ken Burns special on Vietnam. And if you've seen what he has done with conflicts like the American Civil War, you know that this is definitely going to be something for the archives of broadcast excellence. And we are also scheduling for Thursday, October 19th at 7 o'clock in the evening at WFSU, a special live event, because so much of the music that we remember from the Vietnam era on all sides of the conflict continue to resonate today. Just tune into any classic rock radio station and you will hear everything from, what was your favorite song from back in that era? Leon, if I can ask you, what do you remember? And the boy, as soon as you hear that, you think, Nam!
Country and Western was what I enjoyed most. I had a little cassette player, and I still have some tapes from where I taped the music and so forth. And that would, you know, all this other stuff I wasn't even interested in, didn't have time for it. You know, you don't, like the gentleman said earlier, only 20%, if that much, I think it's only 10% of the people that were in Vietnam were in combat, because you have to have support. So the majority of the other people were support troops. You know, we had to have bullets, food, ammunition, all that kind of stuff. So somebody had to provide that for us. And they did a good job. They did, you know, but they were back in those camps. And that's where the drugs started, in those camps. And we had a policy in the Special Forces. Anybody that messed with drugs was gone. We kicked them out right then. Because when you're in the field like that with one other person, you know, he's backing you, and you're backing him. You want him at 100%.
Sergeant, we really appreciate it. Leon Roy, our special guest on Vietnam Memories here on Perspectives today. Thank you, Sergeant.
You're welcome.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee and for FSU. Technical assistance by Evan Rossi and Lydell Rawls. And our 4FSU television crew is John Manson-Hing, Isabella Austis, Suzanne Smith, Paul Dam, Brandy Staney, and Kayla Gaffney, along with Elena Sims. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, a preview of the upcoming Spanish Missions Conference that will bring new insights on some of Florida's earliest European settlers. That's coming up next week, right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.